Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Blues on Parade podcast, where all we do is talk Chelsea and talk shit about Arsenal. Guys, I got mixed feelings, tons of mixed feelings about this match, how it all went down. If I need to step back and put myself in the pre-match shoes, I think I would have taken the result. I just hate how it came down. But Sam, how are you doing today, my friend?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would agree with you, except going into the match, like, I just had a feeling that we were going to win. And, you know, just with the form that we've been on and, I don't know, international break, like, I expected Arsenal to come out flat for some reason. And, you know, 70 minutes of, you know, having a lead, and then the last 20 minutes we just really fall asleep and blow it. So I'm pretty hurt by it. Sure, I'll take the point, but you know, just like this upcoming schedule, we needed to steal one of these games, and this was there. So it's a huge bummer. I think Zach, how are you feeling?
Yeah, if my nephew wasn't born this week, I would say that Chelsea ruined my week again. but thank God he's here and healthy, so happy about that. But no, I mean, this was a kick in the nuts, wasn't it? It just definitely felt that way. But to your guys' point, I mean, it is true. If you told me 2-2 before the weekend, I would have taken it. So, you know, overall, it's a good performance. I think there's a lot of like really good takeaways that we can apply to future matches and whatnot. So it's not all doom and gloom, even though it feels like it right now. But you know, this is football. This is why we love the beautiful game and hate the beautiful game at the same time, because it can give you so much in 70 minutes, and it also taketh away a lot in the last 20 minutes. So it's a bummer.
It was harsh, but we'll get right into it, because Human Capital Department wanted to ask, although disappointing result, was this the best performance we have seen this season?
I don't think so. I don't think it was the best we've looked. Like, if you think about our two goals, one came off a penalty where, I mean, you know, you have to admit that we got a little bit of luck to win the penalty. This is something that, you know, we haven't had any good luck for the past 2 years. So I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, we didn't deserve it. We fucking deserved it, you know? Just like karma had been building over time. And then the second goal was maybe not an intentional goal. So, you know, like, if you're going to just look at the result of the first 70 minutes and say we are up 2-0 against Arsenal, you know, I think just looking at that, like, is not enough. The whole match, I don't think that it was our best performance, but I don't think it looked, I mean, I'm not saying we looked bad, but it wasn't our best performance.
I disagree. I think it's our best performance of the season. I just looked at the rest of our results from the beginning of the season moving on. I think the only other game you could make an argument where we played just as well or executed a game plan as well as Liverpool to open up the season. I mean, the win at Burnley is great, but it's Burnley. The win at Luton's great, against Luton's great, but it's Luton. So just in terms of like the caliber of the competition here, I mean, Arsenal's tied for first. So, you know, they're right at the top of the table. And they beat Man City prior to the international break. So technically, we were the better side, you know, for 70 plus minutes against essentially the best team in the Premier League. So that's how I'm looking at it.
I think this was not our best performance. I think it was our best approach to a game, if that makes sense. And I'll get into that in just a second. I do think that the Liverpool match was by far our best performance. I think that that match, we were unlucky to not pummel them. In this one, I was ecstatic to be up two goals, but nervous the whole time. like they were trying to attack. They just weren't clicking. We were doing the right thing, but it didn't feel like we had the control that we did against the likes of Liverpool the first week, when where it felt like Enzo was just finding every single pass and just completely controlling that match overall. But I kind of want to get into the match with this real quick. The lineup was Sanchez in goal, Malo Gusto and Cucurella as fullbacks, Thiago Silva and Cole at center back. Yes, that's right. Cole did play center back. A midfield three of Enzo, Caicedo and Gallagher. No surprise there. But then a front three of Sterling, Palmer and Mudryk with Palmer, as a false nine sort of thing. And honestly, it was very fluid up front. You can make an argument that Sterling might have been central too. It just kind of shifted a lot. But I do just kind of want to go into what I was saying, where I don't think it was our best overall performance, but I want to give credit to Pochettino, because I thought that tactically he won the match. Making the gutsy call of the false nine, I think was ballsy, but it was understandable the way we saw Palmer playing and dictating play. He just was everywhere, sort of puppeteering the attack. I felt like he was the connective piece from midfield to your Mudryk or Sterling in transition. The way he was pressing in a 4-4-2 out of the 4-3-3, I thought that was extremely interesting. And at the end of the day, had Robert Sanchez not been Robert Sanchez and had that typical blunder, we would have won this game 2-1. So, to go back to human capital department's question, I think Pochettino did everything correct to get the result, and one player, essentially one mistake, led to the whole shift in momentum. Do you guys have anything to say on that?
I would go a step further and say that if Robert Sanchez doesn't give up the first goal, we probably keep the clean sheet and win 2-0. Because prior to that, Arsenal wasn't really offering anything. Martinelli was huffing and puffing, but couldn't really do much against Malo Gusto. That right-hand side was on lockdown. We know about the left-hand side. The only reason why Saka got an 8.0 match rating was because he threw a Hail Mary cross at the 90-something minute, or 80-something minute, and got an assist. So outside of that, I can't really remember any moments where Saka or Martinelli had the better of us. And our center backs, I mean, honestly, guys, when was Thiago Silva or Levi Colwill really put under pressure in this game or needed to be called into action for, a last-minute clearance or a 1v1 tackle? Or those situations never really came to fruition for Arsenal. So, again, I mean, that just tip your hat off to the game plan and the setup and the way we executed.
And Sam, I wanted to get your opinion, because I know you were very critical of how Poch was handling selection, formation. Like, did this match change anything in your kind of the way you see Poch?
Yeah, I mean, because he's now making the selections that I would make. obviously when he's doing the things that I had asked for, I'm going to be happy with that. When he first made the switch over to like this new formation, I said he's going to have to do it for a couple of matches in a row for me to kind of like gain more faith in him. And he's done that. So I got to stay true to my word.
Yeah, I think the big thing here is that Poch has been, he kind of had a bad rap about how he handled the top six in his prior stint with Spurs. And honestly, we've had two of those matches so far where we technically on paper were the underdog twice. And again, I think it's been individual errors or individual lack of teeth in front of goal that have let him down from getting 6 points out of a possible 6 points between, again, the Liverpool and this Arsenal match. Mm-hmm. So for me, the way he handled the bigger matches was my big question, because I always saw Pochettino as a manager that was going to get us the points against your Burnley and your Lutons like we have already. I just had that fear that, can he finally start sort of taming the big dogs? Can he go up toe-to-toe against the guys that are not a, what's the word I'm looking for here? Guaranteed 3 points. So I was very happy about that.
Well, one more thing. I wasn't too happy with his subs. That's the one thing that I thought was just You know, and it's easy for me in hindsight to be like, you know, I didn't like this decision, blah, blah, blah. And I do realize that, like, critiquing substitutions is probably, like, the most, like, base-level critique you can have for a manager. Because, you know, like, that's like a thing that any fan, like, no matter their knowledge of the depth of soccer, like, they can point to that and say, oh, I didn't like how he chose this guy instead of this guy. But I just thought they were weird. Like,
bringing which one on in particular?
Noni, like, bringing on Noni, a guy who hasn't played in a long time, and, you know, I think that obviously a lot of the lack of selection was due to, I guess, disciplinary reasons, and to bring him in a moment like this against a team like this was, I think, maybe, like, his intent was to, like, you know, show, like, give the kid confidence, have him show that, you know, I do trust you and that kind of stuff. But I don't know. I thought that Noni was kind of did nothing when he came in. Sorry, I got you with the food in your mouth.
You're good. I was going to say
late night sandwich.
Yeah. My thought process on the Noni sub is that because it's a late in the game, at this point we had already conceded the first one. Noni is the kind of guy that he'll go at the players that are tired, right? Like, he's going at a Tomiyasu that had to be thrown in late in the game or halfway through the game because Zinchenko was trash, and I don't even think Tomiyasu was much better. My thought there was, okay, you got tired legs in Sterling. Bring in Noni, who is a 1v1 machine, and he's just going to tire out the other team. Like, I thought anytime the ball would, obviously it didn't play out that way, but going into it, I thought, okay, ball goes to his feet, then he's just going to dribble up the pitch, yeah. And if Arsenal gets the ball, it'll be in their final third, somewhere around the corner flag, which is where Noni usually operates, right? And you add the fact that on international break, I think Noni scored 2 or 3 goals. So it's kind of like, okay, let's see if he's still hot. You know, one moment of magic, like what's the worst that can happen, right? We're up 2-1. If he gets us another one, great. And if he's there to waste their energy and time, like, sure. Didn't play out that way. But at that point, I just thought, you know, there was so much action for both Sterling and Palmer that I really thought they just needed to come off. The alternative would have been Mattsson, which, like you said, he has played as the typical super sub, I guess you could say, for Poch. But I wasn't too against that move, I guess.
And did Reece James, he came in like as a midfielder, right?
Yeah, like, he came in to shore up the middle.
Yeah.
Malagusto stayed up fullback.
And that was a little weird too. Like, I understand that one. That one wasn't like something like had to critique him on. It kind of made sense, but also his first game back, like, you know, from injury. I don't know.
Yeah, the subs to me were whatever. I didn't think they were like the do or die. Obviously, we know the obvious, the very clear reason as to why the goal happened and why the momentum shifted. But, Sam, I wanted to ask you, what else did you notice in this match in particular that you just thought, like, okay, this is great?
Well, definitely, I think Zach talked a little bit about this, just the performance of Cucurella and Malagusto in really shutting down Martinelli and Saka, definitely their two most dangerous players. I mean, we shut down Odegaard too, but those three guys didn't really do much up until, you know, the last like 15 minutes. You know, obviously the second goal was kind of Malagusto, I guess, falling asleep, getting beat on that, you know, late run. And, you know, the cross also was kind of Saka beating Cucurella. So other than that last play, they had been really, really locked down. But I was just impressed because those guys are both our backup left back and right back. So, that's just something that I did not think that I would be saying after the match.
Yeah, I think it's extremely nice to be putting out our second options against Arsenal and feel like they were the first choice to begin with. Malo Gusto is 20. This is his first season in the Premier League. And sure, he makes like bad crosses or he forces a cross and things like that. But to be as composed as he was in front of Martinelli, who is coming off of his best season and kind of picked up where he left off. And then Cucurella, who, I mean, to address Russell Saunders' question, and Russell, welcome back to the pod, my friend. He asked, who's the bloke wearing number 3 and what has he done with the Cucurella that joined us up until a month ago? Because we all thought he was never going to touch the pitch. He was doing all right at right back. I had this fear that if we played him at left back, it'd go back to garbage. And then, like you said, and like Zach said, if the Robert Sanchez mistake doesn't happen, we would have had memes of Cucurella emptying his pockets and Saka coming out. Like, I don't think the Saka moment of magic even happens because Arsenal would have been deflated for the full 90. It was incredible, incredible to see him be confident and aggressive. And it's great. It's the most pleasant surprise so far in terms of, you know, through this injury crisis, what are we going to do here? What are we going to do there? And it kind of reminds me, if those out there haven't seen the Netflix documentary for Beckham, where, you know, everything pointed at Beckham never touching the pitch again for Real Madrid. And then when he was called upon, he was one of the main reasons that things turned around. And I think that Cucurella is helping a lot in that sense. He's played out of position. He's now back to where he is. He has been beyond solid. And he even came out after the match and spoke like a captain in my eyes. He was talking about how he's angry and disappointed that we let that game get out of our own reach, and how the team needs to now use that sort of energy to come back and continue the positive form because we had them. We had Arsenal for the taking. So, yeah, I was just extremely happy with Cucurella's performance as a left back there.
Yeah, and just to kind of add and piggyback on what you guys are saying, I love what Pochettino said about him after the match. He said, quote, credits to Mark Cucurella. He deserves that, really. He's training super well. He played very well against a very good player like Saka, and he's working very hard. Remember, he was also able to play on the right side as well. So, you know, this is something that Pochettino's taken to heart, right? You know, he got called into action after, you know, having a really shitty run of form since he pretty much came to the club. You know, whatever you can chalk that off to, might be able to chalk it off to the surrounding environment, you know, coming to a new team that's completely dysfunctional. I mean, whatever the excuse might be, it's very refreshing to see that he kept his head down and he kept working hard and he kept playing hard, even after the failed move to Man United, you know, right at the deadline there. So, you know, I thought this guy was dead weight. Me, like you both, wanted him out. You know, we would have preferred for Ian Motson to maybe get minutes at that position, but I mean, right now, he's undroppable. He's one of the undroppable guys in this team. If you're looking at his performance for the last 2-3 matches, it's phenomenal. I mean, really, no complaints. So, you know, this is it's just refreshing to see that there is a player in there and that we can get something out of him. And I know the $60 million price tag was a lot, and we can debate all day long whether or not, you know, that was the right price to pay for him. But bottom line is, I think we got a quality Premier League player here. And when he's confident, I have no issues with him being selected.
The last thing I want to say, and just the fact that we're not rushing Chilwell and Reece James back. You know, we are at this moment content with our fullback options, whether it's Cucurella on the left or the right, Malo Gusto back from suspension. And shit, even Levi Colwill played decent at left back the last time he was deployed there. So it's not something that I was expecting going into this season. The way the squad was built out, I really thought it was going to be Chilwell, Reece, and if it's not them, we're screwed. But things are clicking. Malo Gusto is, again, 20 years old, and he's picking things up very, very fast. And Cucurella seems like he asked for God to shine a light on him, and he has. So Zach, I wanted to now ask you, what was your big key thing about this match?
I mean, that midfield battle, Arsenal couldn't hold a candle to our midfield, man. Particularly in the press, not necessarily in possession, because we could have been a little bit more dynamic, I think, from the midfield positions. I think Enzo had a good game overall. You know, probably unlucky to not get a shot or two on target there, but mostly in the press is where I noticed not the biggest change, but the most effectiveness from our midfield players. And it's interesting because, Andres, you noticed it too. Out of possession, when we would lose the ball, we immediately went into a 4-4-2, and Conor Gallagher kind of pushed up alongside Cole Palmer to help press the center backs. And that was mainly one player's duty, so it would be either Palmer or Gallagher pressing the center back. The other one would drop off, find Jorginho or Odegaard and cut off the passing line, the passing lanes there. I mean, if you want proof here, just look at Odegaard's numbers across the match. I did a little bit of research, looked at his last four starts across the Premier League and a Champions League. Against Manchester City, right before the international break, 61 total touches. 49 total touches against Lens in the Champions League, match day lost 2-1. 71 touches against Bournemouth, match day 1. 47 touches in a match versus Spurs, that was a 2-2 draw in North London Derby. Against Chelsea, he had only 36. Significantly lower than any of these games I mentioned. And that's not by mistake, that's by design. And I think the way that we set up, the way that we pressed the center backs, we were very much forcing them to play the ball out wide or over the top to bypass their midfield. You know, we completely shut Jorginho down, which isn't too hard to do because he's not very mobile. But specifically with Odegaard, I mean, he's the guy that really makes them tick. And Pochettino was able to identify that and set up a game plan to where we can nullify that. And even if the forward line got broke, got split, I'm speaking about Gallagher and Palmer, if one of the center backs was able to find a guy like Odegaard or a guy like Declan Rice, for example, Enzo and Caicedo were very quick to read those situations and snuff out any danger there. So in terms of their impact from the midfield, which is usually one of Arsenal's strengths, you know, let's not forget, they splashed 120 million on a shiny midfielder like Declan Rice. You know, Jorginho was a Ballon d'Or candidate just 2 or 3 years ago.
Not yesterday. You know,
Odegaard is, yet. I mean, Odegaard's been touted as arguably the best 10 in the league. So we completely nullified all three of those guys. And, you know, I want to add Zinchenko in there too, because even though he's playing as a left back, he's only useful when he drifts inside in possession and becomes like sort of that auxiliary six or eight. And he hardly got a sniff. And Andres alluded to it too. He got taken off because he played like dog shit. And again, that's all by design. You know, these are all things that that Pochettino was able to identify, that Arsenal does really well, and we were able to nullify it. So I really, really was happy with that. I was happy with the effort. I think it was, I want to say the 74th or 75th minute, Raya gets a back pass, and Conor Gallagher is full sprint, balls to the wall, almost 80 minutes into the game of a London derby, and the guy is still sprinting like the opening kick just occurred, right? I got off my seat, I got hyped, and then, you know, lo and behold, we do concede 2 goals right after that. But, you know, that's just the prime example of how well our midfield played and how, you know, efficient they were in fulfilling the game plan, doing exactly what Pochettino said. So, you know, right now, guys, if you're looking at Enzo and Caicedo, obviously they have to start. They're our, you know, quote unquote pivot, but I'm still seeing criticism of Conor Gallagher here, there, and everywhere. And at this point, if you are a Chelsea fan or just a fan of football and you're not seeing the value of Conor Gallagher, you don't know what you're talking about. It's just gotten to that point. The importance of him combined with the strengths of Enzo and Caicedo is so important to making this team tick over. So couldn't be happier with the midfield. I thought that was really the main point that I noticed, where we shined.
Yeah, it was, it's been nice to see his resurgence. Obviously we have the running joke, and obviously there is money on the line between you and Sam, and maybe you guys just spoken into existence, because Gallagher has by far, I'd say throughout this season individually, been our best performer. I don't know if I'll say best player, but definitely best performer.
Best midfielder for sure.
Yeah, but I do want to move on to the one glaring negative of today. Robert Sanchez. Again, we've been like cautiously been singing his praises because we've been, you know, leading the Premier League in clean sheets, all this. We've been pointing out the good things, but with that has always been the caveat of these, all like we growing up, we called them ambulance passes, because when you make those passes, you put somebody in a state of emergency immediately. And then lo and behold, we said we need to erase those out of his game, and we get punished in a game that should have been an easy win. It leads the catalyst to the eventual draw. Pochettino comes out after the game and basically protects Robert Sanchez. And, you know, it's time to ask that question again. Wilson for USA asked us, is it time for Petrovic to get a run out? And real quick, I think we play Brentford and then we play Blackburn.
Yeah,
we may see Petrovic versus Blackburn. And then the way I see it, I don't think Blackburn is going to be enough to suddenly start Petrovic. But I mentioned it like a lot earlier into the season when we were still not winning, that I could definitely see us take a page out of the Arteta book and out of nowhere start Petrovic and never look back. Because it's not it, and again, to use them as an example, they've been winning games with Ramsdale, but then they switched over to Raya and things calmed down a bit. And sure, we've been winning games with Robert Sanchez, and he has made big saves to keep us in games. But who says we can't do that potentially with somebody else? That's kind of where I'm at right now. Saum, where do you stand?
Yeah, I mean, you want to take a page out of Arteta's book. Like, David Raya was very shaky as well. You know, it's not like it's not necessarily the case that like that Arteta made the right decision. I still think that the jury's out on whether he was right or wrong.
I meant the way it happened, the way it went down, and his argument for it.
Yeah, and I also think we're being a little bit reactive. You were right, like you said it perfectly, that we were like cautiously giving him praise because his distribution has not been great, and this was a really bad blunder. I mean, it should have been an easy pass to Enzo. Just like wasn't even near him. And to make that while you're so out of position too, just can't let that happen. But I don't know. Like it, I wouldn't say that he deserves to be benched, but I think if you're gonna try Petrovic against Blackburn, like it kind of makes more sense to try it against Brentford first and then let him play against Blackpool. And then you make your decision after that because, like you said, Blackburn. Yeah, is it Blackburn or Blackpool?
There's both, but we're playing Blackburn. Rovers.
Yeah. Like it just wouldn't be enough, like a good enough sample size to evaluate whether he should be continuing to start. I don't want to be making that decision against. Is it Newcastle that we have after?
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather him start against Brentford to kind of give him that test.
I'm honestly conflicted. Not because I trust Robert Sanchez, let's just put it that way. I think in terms of shot stopping, I think in terms of commanding his box on set pieces and aerial duels, I think Robert Sanchez is perfectly fine as a goalkeeper. And to be fair, Andres, when we sang his praises in the past, that's what we would harp on, right? We would never sing his praises about his distribution or his organizational skills of the back line or anything like that, right? But that's where I also get kind of hesitant because, you know, as someone that played center back and I played in the back line the entire time I played soccer. It's important to have that connection with your goalkeeper, right? And have that familiarity and playing with the same guy time and time again, even if he is shit per se at certain things. You kind of know what to expect. You know what you can and can't trust him with. You know when to clear your lines. You know when to play it back. You know when to show for him. You know when not to show for him. I mean, there's a lot of nuances that kind of go with that relationship between the back line, a settled back line, and a settled goalkeeper. And I think this is similar to the issue that Arsenal's having. Like, if we do decide to play Petrovic, you might get a nice little run to start off, kind of like David Raya did. But then you look at Raya's last few games, and he's looked shaky as a goalkeeper, too. So it's not necessarily... I'm not going to say Petrovic is a solution. I don't know much about him. I never really watched him play, to be honest with you guys. But changing your goalkeeper mid-season, especially in a Premier League match, is risky. And that kind of frightens me a little bit because, you know, at Robert Sanchez is good for his one or two blunders every single match. But at the same time, he is familiar with the back line. He is familiar with the types of passes he should be making. He is familiar with the patterns of play. The positioning of, you know, guys like Thiago Silva, who he's played continuously with, Levi Colwill, who he's played continuously with, even guys like Enzo, you know, who do show for him for those, you know, 10, 15. I think he was trying to play the ball to Enzo when he passed it to Declan Rice, if I'm not mistaken, too. So I don't know. I'm a little bit on the fence with this. I wouldn't be mad if Petrovic did get a run out, but if I'm the manager, I don't know if I'm necessarily pulling the trigger right now. I think I want to see how Robert Sanchez, and it's going to be very unpopular, I want to see how Robert Sanchez responds to the mistake.
Yeah. I think that's what Poch is probably going to be looking at too, right? He came out and defended his guy. So now what are you going to do for me? You know, I stuck my neck out for you. What are you going to do for me? It's obviously easier said than done. I think you're right, Zach. It is going to be really hard to just pull the plug on him. If, you know, we're not losing. Yeah. But I think it just probably reminds us that if a Mike Maignan wants to move out of Milan, we'll probably come knocking. You know, I don't think we're quite settled just yet in that position. I want to move into a few questions. So, you know, I'll go into Kevin McGrath's first. He says, there's no doubt that things are starting to take shape. However, our goals were a soft pen and a fluke cross. Both Jackson and Palmer were one-on-one with the keeper and failed to get a shot off, which would have killed the game. He's asking, do we splash out on Tony in January? Before I answered that part, I was going to say his argument is probably a defense to Robert Sanchez as well. Palmer could have made it 3-0 at one point. And then we could have made it 3-1. So it's just...
Nico Jackson was 1v1 with the keeper and dribbled it right into his hands too, yeah.
So it's one of those things where, like, again, I mentioned it a lot earlier, the teeth and the killer instinct is still not there. So if our team starts at least doing their part and finishing the chances they're supposed to, we can get away with those Robert Sanchez blunders maybe more often than not. But to answer his question about Ivan Toney, I don't think so. And maybe I'm being optimistic, maybe I'm crazy, but I think Nkunku's still to come back, right? And the rise of someone like Palmer makes me think that Nkunku is just going to outright get the number 9 spot if Nico Jackson and Armando Broja don't make it their own by December. Mm-hmm. So for me, the way I see this is, don't show your cards in January, because Fabrizio Romano has been very vocal about Osimhen not signing a new contract. He's maybe looking to force his way out. And if we keep trending the way we're trending and secure our Champions League spot, why not just get the elite guy who is approaching his prime? And then the questions, it's no longer like, oh, we just need a striker. And every one of our problems is solved. We would literally be in a position where everything behind the striker is resolved and the striker is what's missing.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I think you pass on Ivan Toney. I think those rumors have a little bit cooled off. And like I said, I think Nkunku's return is going to be massive for this team. And the way we played with the false nine, talking about today specifically, Nkunku would be huge in this position. You take out Sterling or you take out Mudrick and you keep Palmer, Nkunku plus one, lethal. Lethal front three in my books. Yeah. Because again, you mentioned it, Zach, we can't drop Gallagher. As much as most people want to do 4-2-3-1, drop one of Gallagher, Enzo, it's not happening anytime soon.
Yeah.
So that's my two cents. Would you take Ivan Toney in January?
I'm with you on the Nkunku part. Like, he could be, like, I'm just so excited to get him back because I know that his addition is going to change how we play and how we look completely. So, I don't know. Ivan Toney is not a bad option either. I still think Osimhen is a potential option. So,
I guess January. But, yeah, exactly. In January, do you shell out the money?
Yeah, like that. That's just what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if I would shell out the money in January knowing that you could possibly get Osimhen in the summer, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on board with you guys, and for a different reason. I do agree that if Nico or Broja doesn't wind up banging, that, you know, Nkunku's going to be a sort of shoehorn in for the nine or false nine, whatever position you want to call it. But I still have faith. I still think Nico Jackson has shown plenty. You know, I think we also need to take into consideration how young he is. The fact that he hasn't played as a you know, first choice number nine for top European club for a full season. He hasn't done that. He's never done that. He hasn't even done it for, I mean, he's done it for what, a little bit less than half a season at Villarreal. You know, again, top league. So it is impressive what he did there, but it doesn't have the physicality of the Premier League. It was a scenario and a situation that he was very familiar with in terms of the players, the playing style, the personnel, the coach, X, Y, and Z. Then he comes to Chelsea. I just think we need to give him more time. And same thing goes for Broja. You know, we have such short memories as Chelsea fans. Let's not forget the two games prior to this, both of our strikers scored goals. Broja scored against Palace, and Nico scored right before the international break. So it's not a matter of our strikers not being able to score. Obviously, Broja was injured for this game. I know Nico had a knock, so it wasn't a surprise that Sterling or that Cole Palmer started at the, you know, sort of false nine or whatever you want to call it. But I just think it's too early to make that call. And also, you know, and I know, Arsenal's going to go and splash money on Ivan Toney this January because
that's where I think it's going to.
Yeah, exactly. Because watching them play against us, they're missing that front post runner. They're missing that penalty box poacher. They're missing somebody for all those cutbacks in the penalty area and around the penalty area. You know, granted, we are too in certain cases, but I just have a feeling Arsenal's going to splash the cash on them and we should let them. Tony's a great player. I think he will make them much better, but he's not going to win them the Champions League.
Yeah.
He's not going to give them that push. He might help them win a Premier League. He might give them a title push in the league, but I mean, we're talking on the European stage. He's not the type of striker that you want to be signing if you're a club like Chelsea. If you're a small club like Arsenal, though, maybe. but to your point about Osimhen, I think that's where our focus should be. We should give this whole season, you know, it is a rebuilding phase. We are finding more and more about these players every single match that they play. You know, Cole Palmer and Gallagher are the perfect example. Every single time they play, we're seeing different things from them. Mudrick, the last month has been reborn. I mean, he looks like he's worth every single penny we paid for him. So who's to say that Nico or Broja can't come good? I still think we need to take our time with them. And then if at the end of the season, you know, we lose confidence in one of them or both of them, then at that point, you go after that European caliber striker like an Osimhen, not like an Ivan Toney. And that's not to discount Toney's ability as a footballer, but I mean, Osimhen could pretty much play for anybody he fucking wants. Ivan Toney can't.
To take this question one step further, I honestly don't want to sign anybody in January. Like I would love a quiet window. Like I would love for the window January to come and go, and our name was maybe a pre-agreement for the summer. And again, for someone like Victor Osimhen, because crossing our fingers, hand on the Bible, mentally praying to God, we are healthy come January. It's not just Nkunku, Chukwuemeka, Badiashile. Obviously, Fofana's out the whole year. Reece James maybe figures out his hamstring. Chilwell may be back too. We're talking about depth in every single position. Lavia, who apparently is a gem and the club thinks they found a steal in the market with him as well. It'd be great to see all the billions of euros and pounds that Bully put in for year 1.5 to suddenly be like, okay, no, the foundation is here. Let these boys grow and see where we need to fine tune in the summer.
I think if anything, we should be selling players in January. That should be like the only focus. Maybe get one or two more guys out the door that aren't getting the playing time, get your transfer fees or set up a loan with an obligation, whatever it might be. But yeah, definitely no incomings. I think if anything, a couple outgoings.
And then of course we had to go to Ronnie Oshworth's question, because when things go well and we see different personnel being used, what's our best 11, guys? When all players are available, best 11.
I think we could agree Reece James at right back.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Chilwell left back.
Do you agree? Chilwell left back. Yeah. Healthy okay. Chilwell left back.
Center backs. This is where I think we're going to have our differences.
I think it's what we saw.
You think Cole will Thiago?
I think so.
I think it's Cole will Badiashile. I think people are forgetting how good Badiashile was. And I'm extremely excited to see him come back.
Yeah, let's wait until he comes back and see how he plays.
All players are available. We're talking all players available here, right?
Yeah, but he's coming back from a pretty decent injury.
I'm going to agree with Sam here, just based on the last performance we saw from Thiago and Levi, because, like I said, I don't remember either of them making a mistake. I remember Levi Colwell controlling a ball with his chest and kicking it right out of bounds after on a volley. But
Thiago had a mistake early on.
The pitch was drenched. A lot of those mistakes, I swear, was the rain coming down.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, to be fair to them, yeah. But I would side with them on this one. And I would say, Thiago Silva and Colwell, just for the sake of the combination of youth, athleticism, and experience at the same time. I mean, they're...
Who did you say? You said Badiashile and who?
Colwell.
Colwell.
So Silva is not in your...
No. I think he's... We've seen his limitations. We talked about how Arsenal doesn't really have like a threatening nine in Gabby Jesus. Thiago Silva, slow as hell. Like, let's be... Call a spade a spade. Gabby Jesus couldn't even turn him. So, like, I'm not using him as like the striker that I want Thiago Silva to put up his numbers against, I guess. Okay, midfield.
Okay. Shame on you, but okay.
Midfield.
No, I mean, to be fair to Andres, like, imagine, you know, Thiago Silva matched up with like an Isak type of striker or a Son Heung-min, somebody that does have
and we've seen him get burned already a couple times this season. Like, he's played better recently, but there's been times where it's like, okay, we're clearly protecting Thiago Silva by playing Colwell and De Zassi.
Don't disrespect my man like that.
It's not. I'm
messing with you.
Midfield three, I think we're all on board. It's the midfield we've been seeing for the past month. Gallagher, Enzo, Caicedo. Here we go. Another wrench.
Because, okay. We have to answer the front three first for me to give my best 11, because... If we're going to say Mudryk on the left,
because I am putting Mudryk in my best 11.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah.
And then we're going to put Sterling on the right.
And then
we're going to have Nkunku as striker. Cole Palmer needs to be in our best 11.
I'm benching Sterling for Palmer in a 4-3-3.
Okay, so that does change it, but I still think that Sterling would be in our best 11.
Okay.
And if that's the case, then Cole Palmer would have to play like
Cam.
The 10. Yeah, and then do you put Gallagher on the bench? It's tough. I think I would.
See, I'm sticking to this 4-3-3. I think Palmer on the right, tucking in the way he did, was it last match where he was technically a right winger, but anytime we got the ball, Gallagher would just sprint into that space out wide right. I wouldn't deploy it that way. I would just let Reece James overlap, but I would run the 4-3-3 and Nkunku in the middle, Palmer on the right, Mudryk on the left.
All right, break the tie, Zach. What's yours looking like?
I'm sticking to my guns, man. You can't drop Connor Gallagher. I'm going
4-3-3.
Mudryk on the left,
and then Cole Palmer on the
Palmer. It's your front three. Yeah, we're talking front three now. We agreed on the midfield.
Oh yeah, yeah. So the midfield, yeah, but front three. You want me to say it? Or
yeah.
We've already talked about ours. If you weren't paying attention,
I mean, which I don't think. Mudryk on the left. I'll go Cole Palmer on the right and Nkunku at the nine. As of right now.
Okay, so that's what we're saying. Where you bench Sterling?
Hell yeah.
Even
he hasn't, listen, he's been good as of late, but it's just a matter of, I mean, Cole Palmer's way more influential on games than Sterling is.
So just Enzo. Ask Enzo.
Yeah, just ask Enzo. I mean, you go.
That's I'm not arguing that. My argument is Cole Palmer in for Gallagher.
Yeah.
And then Sterling as right wing.
Okay. I won't be mad. I'm not mad at that.
I respect it.
Talking about best 11.
And I see.
I still think. And I think
there's an argument to be had there. But
and I'm one of the biggest. I'm one of the biggest Raheem Sterling haters. But yeah, I still think that if you're picking our best 11, it's really hard. Like, I feel worse about benching him than I would about benching Connor Gallagher. In all honesty. Like, regardless of how good he's looked this year, I think Cole Palmer has looked better than both of them. So he's just the guy that's not going to get dropped. So, and I just think he's also so important. So I would, it's close. I think that's the one point that I'm like not sure on.
I mean, okay, to play devil's advocate here and to nail our colors to the mast, I'm going to say this. You just think about what Sterling offers compared to a Conor Gallagher, for example, or Cole Palmer compared to a Conor Gallagher, and then compare what Raheem Sterling provides compared to a Cole Palmer per se, right? I mean, Gallagher, in my opinion, I said it earlier, he's undroppable. The energy he brings, the way he keeps our midfield organized, he prevents the other teams from playing out. I mean, he is the ultimate pain in the ass if you're an opposition player, right? But if you're going to compare, let's say, Sterling with Cole Palmer, like, for your argument, Sam, I mean, I think Cole Palmer offers more than Sterling. I really do. I think he could dribble out defenders. I think he's a way better creator. I think eventually he's going to have that eye for goal, and he's going to start finding the back of the net sooner than later. He does for England. He has for Man City. And I think when it comes down to Sterling, it's like, yeah, when he's banging, he's unplayable. He's one of the toughest players to guard in the league, but he's just been so inconsistent.
You mean he's undroppable?
Undroppable. Well, no, unplayable in the sense that
like
if you're an opposition
defender,
you can't play against him. Yeah. There's nothing you can do when he's on it. He's going to spin you. He's going to run at you. He's going to dribble past you. He's, you know, that's what Sterling's great at. But outside of that, he hasn't consistently created and he hasn't consistently scored. And I've seen Cole Palmer since he came into this team consistently create. And also consistently be that guy where our attack kind of centers around. I mean, he is very much the focal point of our attack the last couple of matches. So I don't know.
He's the GOAT, the greatest ugly of all time.
The GOAT, yep. He is my favorite ugly footballer at the moment. Genuinely.
Man, is he ugly. Sorry, I gotta stop saying that.
Ugly's the new sexy.
Yes.
We have to caveat it with that.
All right, let's bring it back to away from hypotheticals, back to the Premier League. We face Brentford next. They currently sit 14th on the table. They beat Burnley this weekend 3-0. And Mbomo. Okay, him is their leading scorer with 5 from midfield. Let's just write it into it. What's the expectation? 3 points. Easy. It has to be.
Yeah, Brentford has not been in great form recently. They started off really hot, but now they're below us in the table, which is saying a lot. Let's see. So 3-0 win against Burnley, then loss to United, drew against Forest, lost to Arsenal, lost to Everton, lost to Newcastle, drew Bournemouth. So since that like impressive start, they've really, really cooled down. And who's the other guy? Jensen. That guy is really sick. He's been pretty impressive lately. So I think he scored against United. So I don't know. I think the way that we've been playing, it's a win for us. We just can't recede back into our old form.
Zach?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident going into this, honestly. I think if we can deploy a similar game plan to Arsenal, smother their midfield, prevent them from playing, obviously keep possession, keep them on the back foot, I think we should be okay. Now, I know Brentford, I mean, sometimes they play with a back three, sometimes they play with the back four, but in either case, I think it's really important that, you know, our wingers are deployed in a similar fashion to how they were against Arsenal, in the sense that they pin their fullbacks back to prevent them from overlapping, to prevent them from having an out ball or counterattack or even a switch, just to kind of release pressure. I think that's something Arsenal really struggled with when we were playing them, and I think that's a tactic that we can take from the Arsenal game and pretty much institute against any other team in the league with success. So I think Mudryk and Sterling are going to be really important, in terms of keeping that high line, keeping their full backs honest. And by doing that, you know, we should have enough of the ball to create a few chances and score a few goals. So, you know, I think their lack of having a center forward in this game, just to be completely transparent with you guys, I think it's actually going to hurt us more than it's going to help us. You know, I think the fact that they could play with two explosive wingers that can kind of get in behind and stretch our back line is a little bit more scary than a guy like Tony, who's a poacher, because I think if Tony was playing, he wouldn't necessarily get the service that he needs, because I really don't think Brentford's going to dominate the ball or dominate possession or any of that. So, you know, there is a chance of Mbomo or even Wissa, you know, counterattacking and creating something on the break. And, you know, but I'm just way too confident in the way we're playing. And let's be honest, guys, the players are really upset about the Arsenal match.
Yeah,
they're going to be coming for some scalps against Brentford. I mean, there is definitely some redemption to be had here.
You mentioned looking a lot like the Arsenal game. I really do think we'll see a true striker back in the lineup. I don't expect Brentford to play us toe-to-toe. I think they're really just going to sit back and hoof it. Mm-hmm. They're not looking good. You mentioned they don't have a true nine. It's going to be a line of five and a line of four. So mm-hmm. we saw Poch's tactics to go against to take on the underdog mentality. Now, we haven't had to see it much this season because we started so poorly, but can we beat the low block? That's where I'm at. I think we will win. The question for me is whether we destroy them or whether it's going to be, you know, kind of like knocking at the door and finally squeaking one by. So I'll just go ahead and start my prediction. I think it's going to be a 2-0 win, but I don't think we score early.
Yeah, me too. 2-0.
Yeah, I'll go 2-0 also. I think it's going to be tough. Like you said, Andres, I think we'll get maybe a late first half or early second half goal and just kind of coast from there. But you know, Brentford are no mugs. They were really good in the league last year, especially defensively. You know, one of the better teams in terms of the rest outside the top six. So I say 2-0. I think that's a fair score.
All right. Well, we are all predicting to get back in winning ways. I think Man United has a tough matchup the upcoming weekend. So if all things play the way we're talking about, we should be moving up on the table again. I didn't mention it earlier, but we are back on the top half of the table for the first time in probably over a year. So we are still trending up despite the disappointing result. As usual, guys, if you're enjoying what you're listening to, give us a follow on X, Twitter, whatever tickles your fancy, at Blues on Parade. Send us your questions. We love interacting with you guys. Heck, even Kevin McGrath, who loves to point out how he differs from us, he sends us questions and we still bring them up. Yeah, we drop an episode every week. You can even email us if you'd like at bluesonparade@gmail.com. But as always, keep the blue flag flying high.